Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
I'm going to tell you right now, I will take as much Mason Short in my life as I can get. What a ceremony we had a chance to broadcast for you on the Dog Nation video channels really just a few minutes ago. The number 4-star offensive line prospect, number 178 player overall, according to the 24/7 Sports Composite player ranking, number 8 interior offensive lineman, former Alabama commit, a guy that Georgia had to fight Clemson to earn the commitment for today, choosing Georgia a moment ago. I love the ceremony. I thought Short was great. We're going to give you a chance to relive a couple of the important moments from what Mason Short had to say after he chose Georgia coming up in just a few minutes. I think that red T-shirt, I should say the black T-shirt with the red Georgia hat, that prominent power G, it's probably never looked better than it does on Mason Short right there. All of that incredible stuff. Now, let me tell you why I like this so much. They're going to let you hear a couple of things from Mason Short. First of all, we have said over and over again that we believe that the 2025 class for Georgia is really supposed to be a line of scrimmage class. And some of that is because of the presence of elite offensive and defensive linemen in our state here right now. And that if you gave me my wish list of what I want more than anything, you know, getting those great offensive and defensive linemen, that to me is how success can really be determined for Georgia in this recruiting cycle. And of course, success is what Georgia expects to have because of how many years in a row it's had kind of the dominant class, the number one class, elite class by all definitions. Of course, Georgia expects to be successful. And for me this year, it's offensive and defensive linemen where that success rests, especially in the case of a guy like Short, because as we've pointed out, when you look at the formula for how Georgia has won its national championships, I think an underrated aspect of that formula has been the outstanding play of the Georgia offensive line. And if you told me moving forward, Georgia could have a great offensive line in future years, well, that means that, A, good skill position players are going to want to come to Georgia because of that, and then also those good skill position players are made even better because of the offensive line they get a chance to play behind. That when you look at what Georgia's been able to do, that's kind of what it is that quarterback, wide receiver, running back, even perhaps tight end, as great as Brock Bowers was, all of those guys maybe just made a little bit better because of the offensive lines they got a chance to kind of play behind. And with getting a guy like Mason Short here today, it's an example of Georgia maybe doing more of that as you get ready for the future. That's the reason I like this so much. We'll hear from Jeff Sintel later on about what he likes about this. But I also want to take a couple of minutes here to sort of zero in on Short himself. And there was one thing in particular that Mason Short said when he spoke to our Jeff Sintel from Evans, Georgia, which is just outside of Augusta, a couple of minutes ago. And I think that it's the kind of statement that's going to perhaps give a little bit of credit, maybe justifiably so, to a little bit of an unsung hero, perhaps, on the Georgia coaching staff. I want you to listen to Mason describing to Jeff the thought process he went into about ultimately deciding that Georgia was the right place for him. And listen to who actually factored very prominently in that decision to commit to UGA. This is fascinating from Mason Short, really just a few minutes ago.
So the 80-20 rule is the 80% the offensive line coach, 20% the head coach. Because you're going to spend most of your time with the offensive line coach. You know, you're going to see the head coach in meetings, in the hallway and everything. But the guy coaching you up as a football player and in life, that's going to be your O-line coach. Because you want to go by how who you're going to spend your most time with and how they're going to affect you. So that's what that's the rule I did, the goods, the bads, the pros and cons to my whole recruiting process.
Couple things here. You know, we've never had a better staff behind the scenes than what we have here at Dog Nation right now. Kaylee Manziel on site with Jeff in Augusta or the Augusta area helping out there. Cody Chaffins, Jay Black here in studio to turn all of this around so quickly, what we just had on the air, and now give it back to you here on the show. Really incredible stuff there on that. But in particular, as far as the statement that Mason Short makes there, 80-20 principle in his mind is I was going to look at my offensive line coach like 80% of the weight and give 20% of the weight to the head coach. Now, that's a little bit against type for what I think some people sort of think of and then think about Georgia recruiting. Kirby Smart is the best coach in college football. Kirby Smart is this cult of personality that sort of shaped Georgia into a two-time national champion. And certainly being around Kirby Smart's got to be a very interesting thing. Mason also told a great story about Kirby essentially tackling him when Mason told him he planned on committing to Georgia. So clearly, Kirby and Mason have a strong relationship. But when Mason Short says 80% of the reason that I chose UGA was because of my offensive line coach, Stacy Sarles, that's the kind of thing that I do think that Georgia fans should lean in a little more closely on and should give great respect for. Because if we're going to be honest here for a moment, when Stacy Sarles not all that long ago was announced as the new offensive line coach at Georgia returning to UGA, a place that he had been in the past, there was more than a few Georgia fans sort of wondering, really? Is this what Georgia's doing? Is this going back to this guy you've had before? And perhaps a little bit of a reminder kind of a bygone era when Georgia wasn't competing for championships. And this sort of felt like a blast from the past that not every Georgia fan enjoy. And yet the recruiting wins that Sarles has earned since he's been Georgia offensive line coach has validated the decision that Kirby Smart made to hire him as offensive line coach. Perhaps no surprise here that Kirby Smart made a good coaching decision, but it is important for us to all kind of give proper context here that Stacy Sarles wasn't universally celebrated when he was hired as Georgia offensive line coach. But Stacy Sarles has gotten the job done for UGA since being put in that position. And another guy said, Stacy Sarles played a bigger role in me coming to Georgia than Kirby Smart did. And I just think that in order to sort of proper context for the decision was made there, Stacy Sarles is turning out in his second tour of duty here at UGA to be a very effective assistant coach for these Dogs. That's probably worth at least spending a couple of seconds to mention. Now, something else that I thought was incredibly fascinating in the Mason Short interview that he gave to Jeff Centel shortly after committing to Georgia on our Dog Nation video channels not all that long ago, earlier this morning, you know, was the kind of player that Mason Short wants to be. And this is where I think you have to fully appreciate the contrast. Because in the ceremony we just broadcast for you, you know, Mason just comes across as this like salt of the earth type guy. He loves fishing. His faith is really important to him. Clearly, his family is incredibly important. His mom was very emotional on the stage, as you would imagine she would be, as her son got ready to make the biggest announcement up to that point, probably in his entire life. The school there at Evans, there was a family vibe around that school there as well. This was all very emotional and I would say a pretty touching ceremony for the most part. And so Mason comes across as this very gentlemanly young man. But he wanted to make it sure that everybody understood that while he is a gentleman off the field and while he is a, you know, a sort of a stately figure and a good dude off the field, on the field, he is an absolute animal. And on the field, he takes that desire to compete apparently to the highest possible level. I loved the way that Mason Short describes the way in which he plays the game. This is just from a few minutes ago.
They're going to get a leader and a finisher. You know, I'm going to be nasty. That's just what my nature was growing up, is competing. And having a guy line up against you think they can actually win against me, it's take it as an insult. So you talked about earlier, like the belly flop playing. That's just where it's going to be. It's a little push after the pile, you know, just don't line up against me again. And go ask your coach to get out because it's not going to be fun. That's what my whole thought process is throughout football. But end of the day, just got to perfect your craft and just be true to yourself. So.
Yeah, you know, the player that Short's probably been most often compared to is a guy like Tate Ratledge. I would say that Ratledge likes playing the game the same way Mason Short describes there. And we know the interior offensive line position, Mason's probably a guard at Georgia, that's a little bit of a street fighter position, right? It's a little bit of a barroom brawler. It's not pretty. It's not always graceful. Sometimes it's, to use the word that Mason just used, sometimes it's just nasty. And when it comes to the nasty part of football, you sort of either want that or you don't. Some people like the idea of football, but the actual football part of football, they don't always embrace that as well as they possibly could. Well, to hear Mason in his own words right there, it sounds like he more than embraces that. It sounds like he needs that. He's fueled by it. And in fact, I love this. This is such a, you know, a competitor's mindset. But he says, I take it as an insult, the fact that someone would even want to line up across from me, the basic rules of the game, the fact that someone would even value themselves as a player enough to line up across from me, I take that as an insult. And that makes me just want to be even nastier. I love that for Mason Short. That is incredible stuff. Now, the tradition in moments like this, when players make their decision to come to Georgia, Georgia fans very quickly pivot to, okay, what's next? And one of the things we love to see is when great players call out other great players, when they want to recruit others to join their position. We've said before, this is an incredibly important year in 2025 for Georgia on lines of scrimmage, offensive line in particular, because Georgia's in play for so many outstanding ones. Mason Short's really kind of the first domino to fall there, but Short used his big moment when the platform was all to himself, when the cameras and the microphones were all pointed at him. Mason Short used some of that time today to call out guys like David Sanders and Juan Gaston, guys he wants to see join him here at UGA. This is Mason Short doing just that.
Who do you want to play with? Who do you want to line up beside with at Georgia?
Coming for you, Sanders. David, that's who we want. We want Juan. You know, those are two great players. As of now, that's the guys I have relationships with, and that's what I'm going to continue. Of course, I'm going to get with my coaches at Georgia, see who they want me to go after, but I'm just ready to recruit.
So those two guys, you mentioned David Sanders, the number one offensive tackle in the country. That's going to be a heavy Georgia-Clemson battle. Your decision was a heavy Clemson-Georgia battle. Who's the other gentleman you mentioned that you have a good relationship that you want to play with?
Juan Gaston, that boy there, he's a beast. Big old boy. I got to speak with him a little bit at the Macon Touchdown Club receive our award. And, you know, he's a great kid. I taught him for a little bit. And just seeing his tape, how big and how fast he is, that's just what you want in the SEC, especially at Georgia. You know, I'm just looking forward to continuing my relationship with him.
So Juan Gaston's out of Westlake. That's an in-state prospect. David Sanders, as you know, the five-star from North Carolina. And the thing that makes this so interesting is that, you know, Short was likely to be a Georgia-Clemson battle. That's what we were led to believe that it was. David Sanders could have also thought to be that, too. And if we're being honest, maybe there's even this belief right now that Sanders kind of views Clemson as his leader. But when Mason Short's making this choice and calling out David Sanders in the process, maybe if Clemson is the leader, maybe that lead is not likely to last. And maybe the Mason Short situation here is the start of something that could be a big building snowball for UGA here in this 2025 class, where more big-time offensive linemen recognize Stacey Searles the same way that Mason Short recognizes him and sees the chance to be a part of something big here for Georgia on that side of the ball. Big doings for the 2025 class here today. Mason Short, perhaps the start of something fun for Georgia. We'll certainly be watching for more of this in the weeks to come. Now, stepping away from recruiting just for a moment, this is sort of just for fun here today. You know, as a member of the Coastal Elite broadcast media, one of the things that I get a lot are these like PR emails that kind of come in from these, various PR agencies that want to kind of publicize something. And for the most part, I'm not a great email person anyway. So a lot of times these emails sort of go in the inbox, into the outbox, the trash folder pretty quick. But I did get something this week that I thought was kind of interesting because it kind of follows up on the big story in the NFL here this week. And knowing our show today was going to be so heavy on recruiting, a lot on Mason Short right there, more with Jeff Sintel on that in a moment. And obviously we'll also eventually get to the stuff involving Matt Zollers from yesterday. I did want to take a couple of seconds to sort of step away from the recruiting stuff just for a moment to just kind of, you know, sort of change the pace here a little bit. Because many of you saw the Stephon Diggs trade this week in the NFL, where Diggs is leaving Buffalo, and kind of an eye-opening decision because not the first time Diggs has been traded, but also for Buffalo, this is a team that's trying to take advantage of the prime of Josh Allen's career. And obviously the Bills have had a really hard time getting over the hump with the Kansas City Chiefs. And so moving Diggs was sort of thought to be a little bit of an eye-opener. He goes to now get a chance to play with C.J. Stroud in Houston, and I'm sure they'll be a very potent offense. But what's next for Buffalo? Well, a lot of you remember Kay Adams used to be on the NFL Network. Now she's kind of doing her own thing a little bit. And Kay recently had Ladd McConkey, of course, we know him very well, on her show. And this week, Kay Adams and Ladd McConkey were talking about the fact that McConkey, in some respect, may have had an influence on the biggest news in the NFL this week. The trade of Stephon Diggs, was all of this perhaps a precursor to the Bills drafting Ladd McConkey? This is interesting. Watch this from Kay Adams here this week.
Did you hear that they just shipped Stephon Diggs?
I did. I saw that.
What'd you think of that?
Yeah, you know, I've met with them a couple of times. I like their organization, so let's go.
Josh Allen?
Hey, that'd be pretty sweet.
That would be pretty insane. Okay, well, we're going to keep that clip.
So is Ladd McConkey perhaps a future Buffalo Bill, maybe even as a first-round pick? And is all of this why the Stephon Diggs trade went down? Obviously, I don't know. I don't follow the NFL closely enough to have a strong opinion on that. But it was certainly interesting to see this. And the one that we do know is Ladd McConkey has really been skyrocketing up draft boards as of late, perhaps even so much so that he had some influence on what turned out to be a massive trade in the NFL here this week. So a lot of fun stuff, a lot of this involving UGA recruiting. We're going to keep that conversation going. But first, let's introduce the show. My name's Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented today by Kroger. We are glad to have you with us across all platforms, live at 10 on video, radio, app, and sports radio, 960 The Ref podcast, all platforms there as well, Apple, Spotify, hosting the show at theworldfamousdognation.com. Just so happy that you're a part of the program today, and so thankful to our friends at Kroger who make it all possible for you there as well. You know, I was saying this to our video audience who joined us for the Mason Short announcement a little earlier, that this is that time of year, and many of you are kind of the same boat I am. It just feels like we're driving all the time. In fact, my wife and I were talking the other day about the fact that the sheer number of like miles we're putting on our cars has just kind of gone way up in recent months for a lot of different reasons. And when gas prices seem to sort of keep going up and up, that's a little bit of a problem, right? We're all, I mean, trust me, my family is just like yours. We're sitting around the kitchen table trying to figure out, you know, how to make every dollar go as far as it can, because that's obviously a challenge as of late. But that's where our friends at Kroger want to step in here and offer you a chance to save some money at the pump. And I know I got your attention when I said that. Here's how you can do it. During this busy travel season, you can get a fuel point every time you spend a dollar right there at your local Kroger using your Kroger shopper's card. So make sure you take advantage of that today. One fuel point for every dollar you spend there at your local Kroger. So you can redeem those fuel points at any Kroger fuel center today. So find out more about that there. Kroger doing some great stuff as it relates to giving you a chance to save money at the pump. That is all really good. All right. Here's what else is really good. Georgia got some great news in recruiting today. That involves the four-star offensive lineman Mason Short. Jeff Sintel will give us the backstory on all that coming up here in a moment. But prior to that, I want to go around the doghouse. And around the doghouse today, poured by our friends at the Finnish Long Drink. Now, we love the Finnish Long Drink. We always have fun with them. However, the news today on the around the doghouse poured by the Finnish Long Drink, not as positive as the previous news we mentioned. Georgia did not get four-star quarterback Matt Zollers yesterday. And when he made his announcement at 3 p.m. in the afternoon, and the one thing we said yesterday morning when we started the show was all of this to me was an honest-to-goodness, genuine mystery. We said we didn't really know what Matt Zollers was going to do. We're going to turn in and tune in and sort of find that out. The other part of that mystery was, well, how much of a true recruiting priority is Zollers for UGA? We had known, in other words, it's a factual objective truth that Georgia was going to host another quarterback on an official visit at the end of May. That's, of course, the five-star in-state from Carrollton, Julian Juju Lewis. And yet, Georgia also recently hosted Zollers there as well, was seemingly very much a factor in Zollers' recruitment. You know, what's really going on here? Obviously, I think that Georgia will have its spin on this and probably needs to. Missouri, who got the commitment yesterday from Matt Zollers, they're going to have their spin on this there as well. In fact, let me show you this on the screen here. This is from a website in Missouri called PowerMizzou.com. And what they put out on the X platform yesterday was, for those who will ask, yes, Matt Zollers was a take for both Penn State and Georgia. Eli Drinkwitz and Missouri's NIL program have changed the game in Columbia. So basically, this is a website and probably among the bigger websites that cover Missouri. There's not as much of a media infrastructure around that program as there is here down in Georgia, but one of the bigger websites that covers Missouri, saying that this was a situation where Georgia really wanted Matt Zollers, Penn State too, but Georgia really wanted Matt Zollers. And the Missouri NIL ultimately won the day. Now, we should point out that's not what Zollers himself is saying. That he's saying, well, it's more about the relationship he had with Eli Drinkwitz and the feel he had from the guys that will become his Missouri teammates. And we would never call Matt Zollers a liar. We don't call any player a liar. But we do know that it's a little bit taboo to discuss the topic of NIL. No player says, my decision is based on NIL, but we all kind of understand that most players are. It's one of those things where, like, there's some players somewhere that's apparently making a decision on the basis of NIL, but it's never quite the player we're talking about at any given moment. And I think there are a couple of reasons why that's the case. First of all, talking about money, generally speaking, is a little bit of a taboo. You walk up to somebody and you ask them how much money they make. They're not likely to tell you. In the case of Zollers, he's just sort of in keeping with typical tradition in our society when it comes to talking about money overall. But in particular here, if a player says, yeah, boy, they offered me a great NIL deal and I went there because of that. I mean, think about the grief that Carson Beck has taken just simply for the car that he's choosing to drive. You know, someone like Zollers might not want to open himself up to these kinds of discussions. So perhaps you pretend like NIL is not even a factor for you because you don't want the potential grief that comes along with that. Plus, there's also the practical reality that two of the SEC teams that have been the most forthright about the, you know, NIL dollars they've allegedly spent, Tennessee in bringing home Nico Iemelaeva, Florida in trying to get Jaden Rashada, who ended up at Arizona State, you know, they earned NCAA investigations for their trouble. Now, at this point in time, the courts have kind of rendered that sort of a toothless, you know, attack. But nonetheless, there's still some extra scrutiny that comes when you're, you know, choosing to be somewhat forthright about this. So when Zollers acts like NIL was not a thing for him in his decision, there are probably some very practical reasons for why he would choose to do that. I guess I'd probably take the media side here a little bit more seriously when they say, yeah, Missouri, big player in the NIL space, that's how they won Matt Zollers, especially given the fact that that's also how we think they won with Williams-Winery a year ago, the defensive lineman, and Luther Burden, the wide receiver, a year before that. And as I joked about yesterday, you can make a case a couple of years' worth of games that were closer than they were supposed to be, 3 years' worth of high-profile recruits they've been able to wrestle away from Georgia. Missouri has been a bigger factor in the life of the average dog fan than Tennessee, Florida, Auburn combined. Traditional rivals who are supposed to have more success, and yet Missouri has really done enough lately to kind of get Georgia's attention on all of this. I guess in a roundabout way, you have to give them some credit. And if you're Georgia, I mentioned the idea of a little bit of spin control earlier. You know, I do think that Georgia's got an obligation now to figure out exactly what their story is on all of this. You know, how much of a priority was Zollers? Zollers was telling media outlets that he was Georgia's number one priority at quarterback. Well, was that really true? And if it's not, Georgia, I think, needs to probably do something pretty quick to sort of indicate just how all in they are on a guy like the five-star quarterback Julian Lewis. Now, speaking of Juju, Juju also had an interesting post yesterday as well. And if you're, you know, listening on radio or listening on a podcast, I've got to describe this to you. But so around the time that Zollers made his announcement, Juju put out a very cryptic post of a picture of himself kind of sipping on a sports drink here with kind of a very, very, very interesting look on his face as if he was sort of taking that all in. It's a little bit like the Antonio Banderas meme or, you know, perhaps, you know, maybe not quite Antonio Banderas, but you know, something along the lines of he at least finds it interesting. I think that's meant to be interpreted however you want to, not meant to be sort of specific meaning around that. But Julian Lewis clearly watching yesterday as Matt Zollers chose Missouri. And, you know, I think the only interpretation you probably have here is that the price for Juju Lewis probably just went up. You know, in the NIL world, Lewis probably got more expensive on the basis of Zollers making the choice that he made. So is Lewis what's next for Georgia? And is Lewis the real priority, no matter what the overtures might have appeared to be for Matt Zollers? Honestly, I don't know. Jeff Sintel is going to tell us more about that here coming up in just a little bit. We'll also point out the four-star Ryan Montgomery, a part of this as well. The one thing that has been confirmed, as we predicted, after Jared Curtis committed to Georgia a couple of weeks ago, we said the quarterback position is about to be very interesting for Georgia when it comes from a recruiting standpoint. And that at least is proven true. This is certainly very interesting. Does it work out to be something good for UGA? I guess time will tell there on that. But compelling and mysterious and interesting? No doubt that's true here right now. And that is Around the Doghouse, poured today by our friends at the Finnish Long Drink. And, of course, we're kind of rolling into a fun weekend. And when I think about fun weekends, especially when it's warm enough to be outside and kind of hanging out with friends, the Finnish Long Drink, always a big part of all of that for me. And I want you to enjoy that yourself here this weekend. Whether it's the peach-flavored version of the Finnish Long Drink for a limited time here in the Peach State, or the Long Drink Cranberry, our good friend Kaylee Manziel, she says she loves that now. Long Drink strong, 8.5% alcohol by volume, the traditional in the blue can, the grapefruit flavor, the gin kick. It's a ready-to-drink cocktail. And if you like mixed drinks, we think you'll love the Finnish Long Drink because it's a mixture drink. You don't have to mix yourself. It came from Helsinki back in the 1950s when the Summer Games were there. And after being in Finland for a long time, it's been in America now for a few years. And now it's in Georgia. And it is wherever you are. So go to thelongdrink.com and you can find out where you can pick some up today. It is great to have the Finnish Long Drink as a part of Dog Nation Daily here today. It's also great to have all of you with us here, too. A lot of good news for Georgia when it comes to Mason Short. Some, I would say, curious news when it comes to the Matt Zoller's decision yesterday to go to Missouri, and then what comes next after that. So what do you say live from the scene where Mason Short just announced? We continue this entire conversation with Jeff Sintel here today on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Kroger.
And across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
I think we can call it a Dog Nation exclusive. Great video coverage of the Mason Short announcement just a few minutes ago. Jeff Sintel, Kaylee Manziel on hand for all of that, doing a great job. Jeff, kind enough to join us here right now there as well. So, Jeff, let's start with the good news. I thought it was an amazing ceremony. I thought the stuff with, obviously, Mason's mom, as emotional as she was, the folks there around Evans, how proud they were to have a player of this magnitude coming out of their program, as you'd imagine they would be. Mason, of course, himself, I thought he was outstanding. Some of the information he gave you in the interview that you conducted with him, really valuable. We've already played some of that on our show here today. You were in the room. What was it like? I'm not hearing Jeff. I believe Jeff may be muted.
Hey, Brandon, man, it was great. First of all, I like the fit, man. That's a pretty nice fit there, man.
Oh, thank you very much. I appreciate that. Thank you.
You're always on the cutting edge of Dog Nation fashion.
I appreciate that.
It was really cool, Brandon. And it was cool for even a guy that has kind of been to a lot of these, maybe 30 a year, 20 a year. This one was kind of cool. And I got to ask you, you always pepper me with some questions. Let's play Atlanta Fulton County Stadium pepper here a little bit.
Sure.
Where does that Ray Charles old sweet song moment rank for you in terms of all these that we've done, man? This is the guy that, mind you, he said he didn't like dog and pony shows,
yeah,
but he created one of the best Westminster Kennel Dog Show ever commitments.
Yeah, no, it's as classy as you're ever going to get. The Ray Charles was beautiful, and I joke with our audience, we'll probably get a YouTube strike for playing the Ray Charles music live on the air, but it was probably worth it because it was very clean. It was very classy. You know, just really wholesome, just a really good, wholesome experience. Yeah, there you hear it and you see it going down. First of all, I thought the black T-shirt with the red hat, what a sharp look that is. Power G, just as prominent as could be. Absolutely amazing. And, you know, listen, when you come from the great state of Georgia, you have great songs to sort of celebrate your state with. You don't have anything like that up there in the upstate of Clemson. So it's a great day to be a dog. And I thought Mason Short gave all of us not just UGA pride, but a little in-state Georgia pride today, bringing out one of the all-time great pieces of music, Ray Charles' version of Georgia on My Mind. That was outstanding, Jeff. One of the best commitment announcement moments we've probably had.
Yeah, I think it's top five at least. You know, it's pretty funny. He told me he was like, they thought about the university fight song, and that would have been, you know, that would have stuck the landing, but it wouldn't have gotten a 10.0 from the Dog Nation Daily judge. But I think what he did there, he said he heard it in his truck, man. And he heard it playing in his truck, and he's like, yeah, that's the one. And it's so funny, Brandon, this Evans community is really tight knit. They tell me stories about when Mason committed to Bama and then when Saban left and how distraught he was. They tried to keep this one really tight,
yeah.
And like so much that there was an aunt who flew in from Texas. And these are just the little backstories we love to share. Probably doesn't go into a newspaper or a website article or a Dog Nation post, but she flew in and she's a huge Georgia fan. And she was like trying to figure it out, trying to get her own intel. And then her sister, fifth grade teacher with this type of level of secrecy, she said to her before the ceremony, she said, well, just try not to let the disappointment show on your face when he tells the world where he's going. She's like, what? they had her thinking Ohio State. And she's like, and then there's mom also said to her sister, I hope they don't boo him when he says something besides Georgia. And then she was flabbergasted. Like mom was crying on the stage. But I don't know if you know this, but like his trainer who had a couple cups of coffee in the NFL also said the invocation before the ceremony, but he was a former contestant on The Bachelor. I don't know if we've ever had a Bachelor alumni make an appearance on our air, but we got that check mark. And then let's just go straight to the good stuff, Brandon. In the post-hat interview, that's what I'm going to start calling them from now on, the post-hat interview. I asked him who he wants to play with. And it was kind of an aside because it was an extremely strong interview for a guy like me that wants the backstory. And he talks about figuring out his decision on the lake, a pond in his backyard, on a John boat. And then he goes and tells his mom, there's a great story about his uncle Mike, who's passed away 8 years ago, and his hat. But then we get to the, you know, hey, I'm a recruiting junkie stuff that everybody wants to hear. And I said, all right, now, who you want to play with? Yeah. Who do you go after? And he kind of looked in the camera and he's like, I'm coming for you, Sanders.
Yeah.
And if you guys follow Dog Nation Recruiting, you know it's David Sanders Jr. there up in North Carolina.
Yeah, we played that audio a moment ago, the video from that. It was really very good. Do we know, and this is more just curious for me, do we know why he made the decision to change his timeline eventually? As you wrote at Dog Nation this week, it was supposed to happen in June, which has kind of become the hot month for recruiting. And yet he kind of jumps way ahead here to this early April date. Was there a reason given for why Mason decided to move up what turned out to be good news for Georgia?
Yeah, he just pretty clear reason. He just doesn't like all this recruiting stuff, Brandon. He wants to fish. He wants to work out. Brandon, this guy, I mean, this is a different recruit. He goes to bed at 8:30 every night now and wakes up at 5 a.m. to work out. That's just his kick. He's very spiritual. There's been some recent tweets he's had where he's been to, I guess, to worship with David Pollock a little bit. And he prayed about this decision, and it came to him, and he was ready. He said it was on, I believe it was the Sunday before Easter Sunday. And I believe I timestamped that around March 24th, and he just figured it out. He prayed about it. He had his decision, and then he went to Georgia, and he just kind of didn't want to think about he had to take an Ohio State official, a Clemson official, a Kentucky official. He just wanted it to kind of be done. And he goes to practice. He told me this story. He goes to practice, and he's like, "Now listen, I don't want you to bring me water. I don't want you to leave me alone. I just want to watch practice." And he just observed Georgia. He observed, like, the way he told me that Stacy Searles, when somebody does something wrong, Coach Searles, he doesn't jump their case immediately. He waits for the other O lineman in the room to police that. And he's like, "Hey, man, that's not right. We do it right here. You got to do that again." He loved it how the guys take care of one another. They're accountable for one another. And he's like, "That's what I want. That's really what I want." And he looked over at his mom, and his mom really didn't know, but he got this look on, she saw this look on her son's face like he was in love, like this is where he wanted to be. And he just got the opinion that it's time for him to shut it down. And he did not want to think about the thought of, you know, taking official visits and waiting until June. He wanted to get it over with. He wanted to be a dog. There's that great story about his Uncle Mike's hat, who passed away and left it to his mother. She kept it in a drawer. Brandon, she kept it in a drawer the whole time he was committed to Alabama. But now she's a fifth grade teacher, Brandon. This sounds like so very much Hallmark Channel commitment stuff here. She's going to go to her classroom wearing her Uncle Mike's old school Georgia hats, probably 25 years old, that he left as an heirloom in his will to her and her family. She's going to go into her fifth grade classroom because they don't know where Mason's going. Probably they all have the Dog Nation app on their phone, so they probably know where he's going by now. But, like, she's going to wear that, Uncle Mike's hat into her classroom, and that's her fifth grade students in Evans are going to know that her son Mason chose the Dogs.
That's a great story. It really is. And something else from the Mason Short interview you just conducted that we also kind of pulled out on the show, and it's following up on, you mentioned Stacy Searles. You know, Jeff, I think this is one of those situations where honesty compels you to admit that when Searles was hired not all that long ago as Georgia's offensive line coach, that wasn't universally celebrated as a good thing by all Georgia fans. Some UGA fans kind of wondering, does Georgia really kind of want to go back to the past where it had been in the past when Searles was here before? And when you hear a guy like this, especially fresh off the group that Searles brought in for the class of 2024, when you hear a guy like this for the class of 2025 saying basically that Stacy Searles is 80% of the reason that he chose to come to Georgia, I think it speaks to the job that Smart did identifying Searles as an offensive line coach and kind of trusting his own instinct on this, even when it wasn't, you know, kind of unanimously approved by Georgia fans. And you got to give Stacy Searles right now, I believe, a lot of credit for being one of the unsung heroes on this Georgia coaching staff. The words of Mason Short, I just think, confirm that to be true.
Yeah, I think Stacy, Coach Searles, deserves a lot of flowers for his work now. I know it was kind of a bumpy start, but continually what he's able to do, and the guys he signed last year on top of those guys, that how he's able to rotate guys like Micah Morris and Dylan Fairchild and have them wait years and years and years to get their shot at Georgia, which will probably be this season, where they're marquee pieces of the offensive line. It's his room's about to turn over, but everybody's got people that they know are at practice. They tell me when they see Stacy, first of all, it's great to see he's back from that bout. I believe it was with pneumonia that happened right around the Orange Bowl time season or whatever. It's great to see him back and totally plugged into Georgia. But everybody tells me Stacy Searles is walking around with a big smile on his face because he knows what he has. He knows what he's going to have. He knows what's on the way. He knows what's matriculating, and he knows what's marinating already in his room. And that future of the Georgia offensive line room, it is crazy to think, Brandon, but we have reached the standard in covering this football team where the offensive line will be better or just as good as it has been so far. And a large bulk of that credit goes to one Stacy Searles.
All right, let's have a music change here, mood shift. And now we got to talk about Matt Zoller stuff here a little bit. And, you know, I'm sure there's a lot about this that can be said. I guess for me, Jeff, now that people have had a little bit of time to digest this, Zoller's going to Missouri, not coming to Georgia. You know, I don't know any Georgia fan that's like, oh my gosh, this was the one recruiting battle that Georgia couldn't afford to lose. I don't know that Georgia fans necessarily feel that way. But the word I used a lot on the program yesterday is mystery. This is mysterious. I didn't know what Zoller's was going to do. I didn't really know how Zoller's fit into Georgia's plans in comparison to a guy in Julian Juju Lewis, who we knew had a scheduled official visit to Georgia. And I would say, with all due respect, the extent to which Georgia allowed this picture to get as murky as it did, I think sort of sets up Georgia for the need to do a little spin control here right now. And they need a little bit of a narrative reboot. If Juju's been their guy all along, they're going to have to do some work to really kind of make it be true on that, because people in Missouri are saying what they're saying. Zoller's himself is apparently saying what he's saying. You know, Juju had a couple of very cryptic messages yesterday where he wasn't really revealing how he was feeling about all of this, but he's clearly noticing it here right now. You know, Georgia's usually pretty good at controlling the narrative about all kinds of recruiting topics. I believe they need a little bit of a brand refresh here right now, because I think the waters are probably a little unnecessarily murky after the Zoller's thing yesterday, knowing that Juju's still out there, and I guess Ryan Montgomery exists behind door number three. This is a little bit of an interesting period here where, you know, kind of the immediate aftermath of the Zoller's news. I'm not obvious what that is, Jeff.
I think you said the word mystery, I think, there, Brandon. I think it's untidy. And let's be clear. This is Georgia talking about discussing. We're discussing what Georgia's 2025, 2026 quarterback futures look like here with Zoller's. Because, I mean, I don't know if I would – even if he would have committed to Georgia, he was so purposeful and methodical, but even if he would have committed to Georgia, I would have just kind of stamped this one as kind of odd. And it would have been – I feel comfortable saying this, Brandon. I don't know how you feel, but the best quarterback Georgia can possibly sign in this class is Julian Juju Lewis. I don't mind saying that. I think he's the best possible quarterback Georgia could sign. I think it's because of his track record. It's not just the ratings and the rankings. It's because of what he's been able to do in his high school career against the very best of the best. Nobody's ever going to discount his competition, as some people will say, hey, look at this quarterback or that quarterback. I think Julian will play great football in college. It's just, how do you get him to the right school? He's currently committed to USC. And I want to just, my thoughts, Brandon, is I've always felt that, and listen, I've had conversations with Julian and his camp. I know Julian and his camp feel like they have always been the priority of the University of Georgia. And maybe this is, you know, like you sometimes talk about how it's kind of not PC or not appropriate, or it's a little indecent or uncouth to talk about NIL. But I think most, if you're doing the right job on your board, there's probably multiple quarterbacks throughout the years that Georgia has felt like, that have led them to feel like, hey, you're our guy, we want you. And I think this kind of turns up the volume on Lewis a little bit. But I think Georgia, to reiterate, Gunnar Stockton can play great football for this team. in 2025 and 2026. I think the same thing for Ryan Puglisi. This is really about having another guy and another elite guy that might even be, he's more higher rated than both of those guys. He's put up better numbers than both of those guys. And Gunner put up some amazing numbers at Raven County, but you got to look at what Julian did in sophomore year and then freshman year. Freshman year, he goes and faces Caleb Downs in the state championship game, has a banner freshman year, banner sophomore year in Georgia's highest classification. The tape is there. The arm talent is there. The ability is there. The processing speed is all there. I think Georgia is worthy to continue this chase here for Julian Lewis. Who knows what it will take? Who knows what it will cost? Who knows what the eventuality will be? And who knows if we'll ever really have a really good grasp of how potentially a Julian Lewis could get to Georgia. On the other hand, I'm not going to change the music like you discussed, but I do think Ryan Montgomery is also a very capable quarterback. He's the type of quarterback that, remember, Georgia wants to get to four scholarship quarterbacks in that room. It's very hard to do. I love the Zoller's mindset. He kind of sees a lot of Carson Beck in his game. The Georgia staff has mentioned some Carson Beck parallels to his game. He also does not mind waiting. What's that popular pop culture catchphrase that this might be the quarterback that everybody wants? This might be the quarterback everybody deserves, to use that Gotham City line there. But I think Ryan Montgomery would also be a guy that would fit in well with Georgia and would also play great football. And like we said yesterday, Brandon, on our kind of traffic report after the Zollers news, I'm kind of on board with the feeling now that I think Georgia helps make these quarterbacks into productive, outstanding SEC passers as much as their incredible talent coming to Georgia makes that Mike Bobo offense go.
So there are two topics I want to address with you before we go, and I'm going to try to do these as quickly as I can because I want to be respectful of your time. But I don't quite know what to make of this. But it seems to me the mood around Julian Juju Lewis is a little bit different than I thought it would be. When he was a freshman doing all the things that he was doing, I was really in anticipation of him becoming the most talked about recruit possibly ever in the state of Georgia, at least since I've been alive. I can't compare it to like Herschel Walker, but like, maybe the most talked about recruit of all time. And for whatever reason, it's not quite happening that way. You know, our buddy Cody Chaffins, when he worked at Fox 5, they're flying a helicopter over Harrison High School when Justin Fields committed to Georgia. I don't see that kind of hysteria around Juju right now, even though Juju is probably a better player at this stage of his high school life than Fields was then. You know, think about Jacob Eason way out in Washington for the class of 2016. There was a level of hysteria about him then that doesn't seem to exist around Lewis right now. Now, some of that may have been because, you know, elite recruits like that were a little more foreign to Georgia at the time. Maybe there's mitigating factors around all of this. But the sort of unmatched hysteria around Juju's recruitment, it's not really happening. Now, I think Georgia fans like him. I think everybody respects his game. But this is not comparable right now to other five-star quarterbacks that Georgia has recruited. Do you agree with that? And if so, why do you think that is?
So I feel like we're talking about there, Brandon. It's a good take. I think it's impediments. It's barriers to just falling head over heels. Let's be mindful. He's been committed to USC for quite some time, and he's been stamped as the poster boy of NIL, fair, unfair, for the state of Georgia and also kind of college football quarterback recruiting, at least in our region. I think there's another big factor there too, Brandon, is it's 2001 and 2002. Georgia, listen, we're grateful that everybody still tunes in. They watch, they read, they still gobble on everything we put in the dog food bowl. But I do think the recruits these days, I've sensed it. I don't know if you've sensed it, but it's no longer this guy is going to take us out of 40 years of wandering in the desert. Mm-hmm. There's no longer going to be a Moses recruit.
Yeah,
I think those two championships, because Georgia has celebrated and won the last game and, you know, held up that football or whatever, I think Georgia fans no longer look at these recruits as – there's two things. They no longer look at this recruit as this is the guy that's going to get Georgia there, because Georgia's already been there and they're consistently there. And the other thing there is there's this NIL component where it's different. And it's different in terms of, yeah we can't all this being said, I tried to fill up the segment with my thought right there, Brandon. All this being said, I bet you can bet your bottom dollar. I wonder what you would think. You can bet your bottom dollar that if Juju Lewis flipped to Georgia over the weekend, I think there would be people running up and down and celebrating, kind of like that story Jaden Hazelwood told me one time when Georgia beat Oklahoma in the Rose Bowl. He came running out of his. I don't know if we would have drew a chortle today when Mason Short was calling out David Sanders Jr., but I bet, Brandon, if you had a flip from Juju Lewis to talk about, everybody would just fall right in love. They wouldn't care about NIL dollars or dotting the I's or crossing the T's. They'd be like, hold on, that dude's coming to Georgia. That dude's going to play for Kirby Smart. That guy's going to have potentially a Juan Gaston, a Mason Short, and maybe even a David Sanders in front of him blocking. And they're like, all right, let's get down to business. Because what I teased in our show yesterday is what I'm looking for with Georgia in this kind of prime territory of Kirby Smart's career in Athens, is I think the very best stretch of Kirby Smart's years in Athens are up ahead of us. I think it's possible, and I think they're stocking the roster in order to do so.
All right, last thing for you. And I can't help but think back to when, you know, Kirk Herbstreit got his pom-poms out and started cheerleading so hard when Dylan Raiola chose Nebraska over Georgia. We always had a read on that, which is not that Herbstreit influenced Raiola's decision, but Herbstreit's reaction to the decision is representative of a lot of people in college football. They like the fact that there's this perception out there that, like, NIL and things like that are doing more to level the playing field for college recruiting. Now, if that's true, that comes at the expense of Georgia, which has hoarded so many elite prospects for such a long time. So let's pretend that Juju doesn't exist for a moment. Zollers yesterday chose Missouri over Georgia. We've seen now 3 years in a row of elite recruits choosing Missouri over Georgia. That's not all the time, because a guy like Jane Riddell also chose Georgia over Missouri. So it's not like Missouri is exclusively beating up on Georgia, but you get the point that I'm making. But my question for you is this. Is this representative of a larger trend where elite recruits are just spreading themselves out more? If you look at, like, you know, top 10 player rankings, whichever recruiting service you favor, the national websites, they were a little more spread out last year than they kind of been before. Is that a byproduct of NIL, Georgia's ability to kind of hoard all the elite prospects it wants, or Alabama's ability to do that, or Ohio State's ability to do that? Are we going to see a little bit more parity where the elite recruit's going? Have we seen sort of peak blue chip ratio where some of these numbers are going to start coming down a little bit because NIL creates the opportunity for players to go other places?
So, good point. I look at it last year, and I do bring Major League Baseball, as a lot of Braves fans that are kind of my age and your age, Brandon, they learned a lot, hard lesson in their 20s and 30s about the economics of baseball. I think that's kind of going to play out in college football. I think what Missouri's doing is they're trying to find their Greg Maddux type or Alex Rodriguez type recruit for their class every year, or a lot of schools are. There's their high dollar guy. What I go back to, Brandon, is last year when Georgia, I believe the number, now the rankings changed a little bit, but I believe the number was 18 prospects inside the top 200. Brandon, that is absurd. That is Montgomery Burns style domination, just selfishness in terms of trying to hoard all the players for themselves. And I think Georgia can still do that. It's just maybe those top elite guys. I mean, Brandon, these recruiting cycles continually teach me, a guy that's been intensely studying Georgia recruiting going back now to 2014, 2015 professionally, and a lot of years before that. But like last year, Brandon, Georgia got in with 2 5-stars without heavy NIL influence, just based on culture, with guys they barely offered by the time March ripped off the calendar. And that never happens. That should not happen. And Georgia's able to get a Chris Cole, and Georgia's able to get a Justin Williams, two of their 5 highest rated guys in the class, without the economic numbers here. And I want to, I know you asked me, this just came to me, Brent. I know you asked me to kind of toss Julian in a vacuum. And you asked the very pertinent question about, hey, why aren't more people giddy over this recruitment? Why isn't it a bigger deal? I think what Georgia could do now, should they add Julian, it's not what Dog Nation will say. It's not what message boards will say. Brandon, it's what college football will say. And they'll go, hold on. Mic check here. Georgia just added Julian Lewis to their team. I think more college football coaches will notice that, because they might sit there and think, is that a change in philosophy where Georgia will go after the perception of the high dollar player? Or is it a change in philosophy on Julian's part where they'll go, he really wants to win, Brandon. If we look at Julian's career arc forever, he's wanted to go where he can win. He's wanted to go where he can surround himself with great players. And maybe Georgia's culture finds Georgia a way to get a discount maybe on that highest bid. I mean, his family's already told me that Georgia doesn't have the highest bid out there, and they're not committed to the highest bid out there. So that's maybe I'm going to take them at their word that simply the big ticket number is not what they're looking for. They're looking for a way to put Julian Lewis's brand above what Caleb Williams had. And Caleb's had a great brand. He's going to be the number one pick in the NFL draft, but he didn't win. He didn't play in those big games to create legendary moments, to create a legacy. And I do think when the Julian Lewis family looks at Georgia, they think those things are possible in Athens. And I don't know if you could ever put a price tag on that.
Interesting stuff, Jeff. Thanks for your reporting there in Evans, Georgia today. Georgia gets some good news. Four-star offensive lineman Mason Short on his way to UGA. Be careful coming back. We'll look forward to seeing you back here soon, of course, in person for G-Day next Saturday there in Athens there as well. Jeff, have a great weekend.
See you, buddy. Have a great show.
Thank you.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Let me see if I can make this point, and maybe I'm just wrong about this. I am often wrong, so this would just be another thing on the list, but Georgia fans are very astute recruiting observers. And for Georgia fans who live like deep inside that bubble, their reaction is different than like what casual observers might be. I'll give you a couple of examples. Not to mention any names here, but there are times in the past when a player has decommitted from Georgia, and in conversations among Georgia fans, that gets celebrated as good news because, well, if he's leaving the class, that means they're making room for so-and-so to come in. And sometimes it's true, sometimes it's not. But you know what I'm saying here, right? There's a real deep look at Georgia recruiting that sometimes would cause a Georgia fan to celebrate something that to a casual fan might not seem like such good news. And so with that in mind, you know, there have also been these commitment announcements before when so-and-so didn't choose Georgia. It's because that means so-and-so is going to choose UGA, and that's where the focus is. And you know, I couldn't help but notice that yesterday in trying to observe Georgia fans after the Zollers announcement, you know, if Georgia fans really were like as all in on Juju, like that would have been like, okay, good, you know, move on to the next because Juju's on his way to UGA. There's probably some of that, but I didn't certainly see that as kind of a unanimous statement that's out there. And I'm not even sure what that means. Maybe it doesn't mean anything, but I do think there is, to use a word that I've used a couple of times over the last couple of days, a little bit of mystery here. Mystery in terms of how Georgia fans kind of perceive Lewis, how Lewis perhaps perceives UGA, and where all of this is going in the current NIL age in which we live. Pretty fascinating times, and obviously plenty more pieces of information sort of fall in place on all of this. Now, for now, let's go cruising around the SEC, courtesy of Royal Caribbean. And obviously, we're getting ready for a great Dog Nation cruise and getting ready to have all of you on board. And when it came time for our Dog Nation cruise, you know, our folks at Royal Caribbean's like, in order to make this experience be great, you need to have a great travel agent to help you out with all of that. And that's how Jessica Slater was specially selected for us. So you can give her a call, 770-718-9147. That's 770-718-9147. Also email her at jslater@dreamvacations.com. Because the person that we chose to plan our Royal Caribbean cruise here on board Allure of the Seas, and look at the Flow Rider there. Now, I think it's really cool that Allure of the Seas has two of these Flow Riders. I'm nowhere near as good as the people that you see if you're watching on video, the sort of stand-up surf simulator. It's a little bit more of a sort of a belly flop surf simulator for me. I can lay down. I can almost get up on my knees, but can't quite fully stand up. But that's no problem at all. It's still a really fun thing to do. When you look below that deck, you kind of see down to the boardwalk area. You see the ship at night, how just sort of pristine it looks when you're just sort of sailing on the ocean. I mean, how excited does that get you? If you're ready to take your own Royal Caribbean cruise vacation here in 2024. Well, as I said before, Jessica Slater, a great travel agent to help you do all of that. Our friends at Royal Caribbean, we love spending time with them. Can't wait to see all of them coming up in a couple of weeks. Can't wait to see all of you who are going to be with us on our Dog Nation cruise. And trust Jessica Slater. She can help you book your own Royal Caribbean cruise vacation. One more time, 770-718-9147 or email jslater@dreamvacations.com. So, I saw where Dabo Swinney this week was asked about the lawsuit that Clemson's trying to put together to, you know, get out of the ACC, basically. And Dabo kind of in a kind of a sort of a funny, folksy way tried to sidestep the entire thing and basically put that on his university leadership, saying all those questions need to be directed to those folks. And this is where I'm going to kind of re-rack an opinion I've said before as it relates to Mike Norvell and Florida State. At the time that Florida State was pursuing K.J. Bolden, they were also behind the scenes, we learned, trying to figure out how to get out of the ACC. Now, the question I asked at the time was, do you think they were telling K.J. Bolden that? Do you think they were telling K.J. of, well, if you come here, we are in the ACC, a league that we don't believe gives us a chance to make the college football playoff, hamstringing us financially, but we still want you to come. Do you think that's what their recruiting pitch was to K.J. Bolden? Of course it wasn't. They were telling him, oh, man, we're program on the rise. Things are so great here. Keeping it a secret that deep down they knew they had to get out of the ACC. Well, that's obviously also relevant when it comes to Clemson here as well. As we talked about with Jeff Sintel, Clemson was in hot pursuit of Mason Short. They are still in hot pursuit of David Sanders and other targets that Georgia's also interested in for this 2025 class. My message to those recruits would be the same thing I would have told K.J. Bolden and did tell K.J. Bolden on this show about all of that. If you're an elite recruit right now, you cannot go to an ACC school. It would be the worst mistake you've ever made because the ACC schools themselves, the Clemsons and the Florida States, they are telling you in no uncertain terms they don't play in a league on the same level of the SEC or, for right now, the Big Ten. Their actions are telling you that. They are suing their way out of the league. At least that's what they're trying to do because they know financially they're at a disadvantage. Competitively, they're at a disadvantage. They're trying to get out. Now, when David Sanders is talking to Clemson, is Clemson telling him that? My guess is probably not. The same way my guess is Florida State wasn't saying that to K.J. Bolden either. But if you're a recruit trying to make the best possible decision you can make, you've got to look at everything going on. And the league your school plays in matters. And the long, arduous process of actually getting out of the league may take the entirety of your college career, perhaps. Or maybe you get out of the league, but it's not obvious where you go next. Because, to be honest with you, it's not a certainty that Clemson would necessarily have a home in the SEC the moment it left the ACC. It might, but it's not obvious that it would. So if you're a recruit right now, pay attention to the news. Notice the lawsuits and the legal maneuverings and the desperation on the part of programs like Florida State and Clemson, places that would typically be destinations for top recruits. But because of the league they play in, I don't believe that Florida State or Clemson should even be a consideration for a top recruit right now. Moving on, I thought it was very interesting that Gus Malzahn, the UCF coach, in talking this week, acknowledged what a big game it is for his program to get a chance to play Florida. And it is. We've seen UCF beat Florida in a bowl game, of course. This is a little bit of a different type of deal here. This is UCF now in the Big 12 with K.J. Jefferson coming in at quarterback. In a league they have a chance to win. I would say that UCF is probably the best recruiting program in the new-look Big 12 right now. And just on paper, they have a chance to obviously be better than Florida is here this year. Can you imagine what that would do for Gus Malzahn? Can you imagine what that would do for his stature as a coach if they are able to get another win against Florida? It might be the death knell for Billy Napier. But on the positive side of that, I mean, Malzahn looks pretty shrewd right now, right? He got out of the pressure cooker that was Auburn, got to a place like UCF, and was maybe content to enjoy just a little bit more leisurely pace as a coach, and then lo and behold, kind of fell his way back into a power conference, and all of a sudden now in kind of a new-look league because of where he's located has a chance to probably have a better roster in most years than the average Big 12 team probably has. Probably a pretty good time to be Gus Malzahn right now, a good time that could be made even better if they can beat Florida this upcoming season. I thought that Greg McElroy on his podcast recently had an interesting statement to make and talking about some sort of dark horse playoff contenders. He mentioned Texas A&M. Now, for a lot of our audience, this is going to be a little bit of an inside joke because they have ribbed me for years because I touted Texas A&M only to see Jimbo Fisher prove incapable of leading the Aggies to greatness in any other year other than the pandemic year of 2020, which we have countless pieces of evidence to prove doesn't count. But the point is, I do think that Texas A&M is probably a pretty interesting team in the SEC because they are a total afterthought at the moment. All the attention on Georgia and the Aggies' in-state rival, Texas, and then after that it's, hey, what's Alabama going to do with Kalen DeBoer, or what's Ole Miss going to do with all these transfers, and hey, Missouri trying to come back and be a top 10 team again. That you probably don't even get to A&M in the discussion about the SEC until you're like at the number 6 or number 7 spot, because let's face it, Nico Iamaleva in Tennessee may have even generated more offseason chatter thus far than Texas A&M has generated. But if you care about like win total projections and things like that, Texas A&M actually sits at about 8.5 right now. That is probably a little bit of a higher total than some people expect for them. Obviously, they bring in Mike Elko as head coach, a guy that proved to be pretty successful there at Duke and was a good DC there in College Station prior to this. In other words, I can't go probably as far as Greg McElroy is on this and using the word A&M and playoff in the same sentence, but perhaps better than you realize and maybe good enough against a Missouri, which it plays, or a team like that that perhaps has higher aspirations. Could A&M do something to bring some of those teams down to earth and maybe itself have a better year under first-year coach Mike Elko than they expected? I would say that's at least a possibility. Kind of an interesting statement there from Greg McElroy. And, of course, speaking of McElroy, his alma mater, Alabama, they play this weekend the Final Four. They're in Arizona for all of that. And, look, you know, UConn's been unbeaten, or I should say unbeatable, I mean to say. They had the weird travel stuff going on. You know, Purdue is sort of shaking off the previous sort of blemish they wore because of all the early round upsets they took. Alabama, to its credit, has kind of emerged as the last SEC team standing. I'd say this is probably a pretty interesting Final Four. I don't know that it's quite as much on my radar as, like, say, Braves home opener this weekend or Diamond Dogs at Mississippi State. But I'm probably watching, you know, some of this, certainly somewhat compelled by the outcome here. So we'll keep our eyes on all that. And I guess we'll continue to be a little bit of a hater there, too. Anybody but Bama kind of the rest of the way. Maybe our thought on that. But nonetheless, the Final Four is on tap for this weekend. We'll make that cruising around the SEC courtesy of Royal Caribbean. Now, speaking of the Diamond Dogs, how about this from our friends at the UGA Bookstore? Your chance to be a part of history here right now as the incredible season continues to unfold for the Diamond Dog slugger Charlie Condon. The UGA Bookstore has got a limited supply of Charlie Condon baseball jerseys. How cool is this right now? I know at least one young man, a 12-year-old that lives in my house, that'd probably like to get his hands on one of those. But you have your chance to do that too. This is the first time ever that the UGA Bookstore has a supply of a current player's baseball jersey. So this is kind of a historic thing in the case of Condon. A guy who's going to be a very, very hot major league prospect this time of year from now. Obviously, a great first time here to have Charlie Condon jerseys there at the UGA Bookstore. So stop by and see him at the UGA Bookstore. You can also shop online for that there as well. We'll be there at the UGA Bookstore for the Dog Nation postgame show after G-Day next Saturday. But how about those Charlie Condon jerseys at the UGA Bookstore right now? That is definitely something you're going to check out and enjoy. So speaking of the Final Four, we have our Golden Shoe Bracket Challenge that continues here this weekend. And I'll kind of make fun of myself here for a moment via the Golden Shoe. I was curious where I ranked in all of this. I am in 38th place here at the moment. Had Arizona winning the championship. That was obviously laughably proven wrong. So 37 of you have a better score through the tournament thus far than I do. Pretty embarrassing showing. I didn't expect to do much better than that, but there you go. OBA down at number 38 in our Golden Shoe Bracket Challenge. So 37 people can at least take a bow in my direction for having better picks than me. Golden Shoe going to all the folks who participated in our Golden Shoe Bracket Challenge, and good luck to those of you who are still alive with a chance to win this thing. Lousy, stinking Gators, they have no chance to win anything. It's been 1,245 days since they beat Georgia. We love that. It's our Gator Hater Updater. Have a great weekend, everybody. We'll see you back here Monday, Dog Nation Daily, presented by Kroger.